Welcome to Shouts from the Back Row, the official podcast of the-back-row.com. My name is Gil, and I'm your host, and with me as always are my co-hosts Robin.
Hello.
And TK.
Hello.
On this show, we're going to be discussing a trend in filmmaking that has really seen a boom in popularity in recent years, that of the aging action hero. Ever since we covered The Expendables on our second episode ever, we've seen more and more films being released that star old action movie stars who were popular during the 1980s. Now, since we love action movies from the 1980s, I'd say it's about time we revisit the topic of these badass senior citizens of cinema. And along the way, we're also going to contemplate who might take their place when they finally do get way too old for this shit. But first, some announcements. The Back Row has a PayPal account, and we're accepting donations. If you feel like throwing some of your hard-earned dollars our way, you can do so at The Back Row. Just go to the-back-row.com and click the Donate button in the right column. If you donate, you can choose a movie for us to review, and even specify which of us gets to review it. Doesn't that sound like fun? So wire us a nickel and tell us your favorite 80s action movie. Shouts from the Back Row is available through iTunes. If you search the iTunes store for The Back Row Podcasts, you can subscribe to our feed, which will not only get you your weekly dose of media culture from us, but also Tom Lando's all-original audiobook podcast series, Oathbreakers, and back episodes of our heavy metal podcast, Drop D Revolution, and our surreality podcast, The Tom Lando Files. Tell your friends and subscribe today. Now, we'd like to open the show with a discussion of what we've been up to. This is a place for us to talk about movies we've been watching, TV shows we've been following, games we've been playing, and just about everything else we've been doing. So, TK, what have you been up to?
So I finally caught up with a couple more Oscar films, which is super exciting. I got a chance to watch Silver Linings Playbook. And out of all the movies I've watched for the Oscars so far this year, Silver Linings Playbook is my second favorite as of right now. I thought it was a really well-acted, kind of fun movie with a really good cast. I actually really liked De Niro in it. I thought he was very good. Have you guys had a chance to see this as I talk about it?
I saw this one. I was not keen on the movie overall, but I really liked Jennifer Lawrence in it. And I thought Bradley Cooper
like
also
Jennifer.
Did a good job. You didn't like Jennifer Lawrence?
No, I didn't. I did really actually.
See,
Bradley
I didn't
Cooper,
like De Niro. That's really interesting.
But I really like Cooper. He was excellent. I was very impressed with him. Actually, I thought I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but his performance kind of blew me out of the way. I thought it was really good. There were some problems with it. Like a little too, I'm sorry, when your movie's climax is a dance competition,
yeah,
it's, and it's not a step up movie, it's hard to take it seriously, you know what I mean?
Gil said the exact same thing a couple weeks ago.
But, I enjoyed it, like I said. It's, I'm not sure. I really think, compared to the competition, I think Jennifer Lawrence might take this Oscar, but I'm not calling that yet. Even though I wasn't very impressed with her performance, she's gotten so much critical praise over the last couple of weeks that it's hard to kind of ignore.
What didn't you like about her performance?
There's something, like, I like Jennifer Lawrence, but I don't find her acting very good. That's just me, but there's just something about it I don't really get into.
Have you seen Winter's Bone?
No, I haven't, although I've been told I need to, because it's very good. I'll watch that and then maybe come back with a better opinion. What else did I watch? Oh, I've done all the animated movies. I've seen them all. I finished off Paranorman and Frankenweenie. I loved Paranorman. A really good original story, really good animation, good voice acting. I was really impressed with this film. And scary. For like a younger kid, like I don't know if I take them to this. It was spooky, I thought, and really kind of unnerving. I love the ending credits. I thought they were really, really good. It's my favorite out of the five anime movies that were nominated this year. I loved it.
One of my top three of the year. I loved that one too.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And, Frankenweenie I've seen before, because it's based off an old live action movie that was filmed in the early 90s that Burton directed, that I actually like a little better than this one. There's too much added stuff, added fluff to make the movie longer, because the first one's kind of a short. And I wasn't really impressed with that. It's very Tim Burton-esque. It's I don't know what else you could say about it. It's a very typical Tim Burton film, and it didn't really do a whole lot for me, except it had Martin Landau doing the voice of the science teacher, which I particularly enjoyed. And Catherine O'Hara did a whole bunch of voices in it as well, which I thought was fun. And other than that, I wasn't really that blown away by this movie. So
you have no heart.
No, I have none. I just it didn't really, I don't know, didn't really do anything for me. It didn't really make me laugh. It didn't really make me sad. It was just like, it's upsetting, but it wasn't like I was bawling over it.
Well, yeah. Fair enough. I found it really sad.
Yeah. I also have been keeping up with Californication and Archer, and I caught up with a couple of episodes of American Dad that I've missed out, and I'm enjoying this season an awful lot, and I hope we get some better quality stuff of it. And I've actually been kind of impressed with Family Guy the last few episodes, so hopefully they'll be able to keep on that trend and we'll see a revamp in the series. Other than that, I haven't had a chance to play many video games, so what have you guys been up to?
What have you been up to, Robin?
I went to see the movie Gangster Squad, which, as you all know, was originally set to be released in September, but because it contained a scene involving a movie theater shooting, they decided to bump it to January. And I'd say this movie probably fits as a January film better than a September one. Like, it's an entertaining time at the movies, but it's pretty dispensable overall. When you look at the amount of talent that was involved making this film, it's not as great as it should have been. I've heard a lot of people call this movie kind of a knockoff of The Untouchables, but without the David Mamet screenplay. And that's kind of the case here, because you can tell that this wants to be like the new Untouchables, but the script is kind of cliched and predictable, and a lot of the dialogue in it is kind of flat and laughable. Like, you'll hear, like, I remember Josh Brolin has a line where he's saying to his wife, "If I quit right now, this was all for nothing." And he has this, like, really sappy voiceover narration at the end where he explains, like, the moral of the story. So I think the failings of this film are probably at the script level, but from a production level, it's pretty good. I would actually compare this to the movie Lawless, which I saw a couple of months ago. My opinions on both these films are pretty much exactly the same. They're great gangster flicks that have great period detail, and they have very well directed, and they have like a very standout cast, and they have a terrific performance by the actor playing the villain. Guy Pearce was terrific in Lawless, and Sean Penn is terrific as Mickey Cohen in Gangster Squad. And both films also have a big name actor that's wasted. I thought Gary Oldman was underused in Lawless, and I think Nick Nolte is criminally underused here in Gangster Squad. So but overall, it's still an enjoyable time. If you like gangster flicks, you'll probably have fun watching it. But like I said, considering all the talent involved, it probably should have been something much better. So I think it fits better as a dispensable early year release. And I don't think, even if it had been released in like September last year, it would have been even considered for Oscar nominations or anything.
So what do you think of Ruben Fleischer as a director? Very uneven filmography so far, because he's only done, what, Zombieland, Gangster Squad, and 30 Minutes or Less?
Yes, that's true. Of course, Zombieland was terrific, and 30 Minutes or Less was okay, but it was kind of lacking overall. And Gangster Squad, I kind of felt like he was being a film geek here. Like, he was trying to direct, like, his own, like, Brian De Palma old school, like, gangster movie, and he did a pretty decent job. So I can't really evaluate him based on this, because I think the faults in this movie are more to do with the script rather than Ruben Fleischer's direction. But I would really like to see him get another project that's worthy of him, because it's kind of hard to tell whether Zombieland was great because of the script or if Ruben Fleischer is just kind of a average director at best.
Hmm. TK, have you had a chance to see Gangster Squad? I know this is one of your most anticipated films of the year.
Yeah, it was. I actually haven't had a chance to get anywhere near it recently, which is upsetting, but I've heard much of the same thing. I had some friends that went to go see it, and they weren't really horribly impressed with it, which is too bad, but I'm still going to see it, because I think it'd be worth it to see Gosling and Nolte rub shoulders for a bit, to be honest.
Yes, this is pretty much a classic Ryan Gosling role. I almost sensed his character from Drive and the character he's playing here. So he's kind of playing the same old, like, somber, low-key kind of action hero in this one. So if you like Ryan Gosling, you'll probably like his performance here. And as far as what else I've been watched, I've actually caught up with a couple of other Oscar Best Picture nominees myself. Life of Pi and Beasts of the Southern Wild. And these are two films that I probably wouldn't have had a lot of interest in seeing if they weren't nominated for Best Picture. But of course, now that makes me obliged to see them. Life of Pi, I had a lot of the same problems with it that I think Gil talked about when he mentioned it on a podcast a few weeks ago. It's a visually striking film. I probably might have liked it better if I had seen it in theater in 3D, because I hear the 3D is amazing, and the whole section with the late lead character on the raft with the tiger is really compelling stuff. But the main problem is the framing device, where they basically establish right at the beginning by having the older version of Pi tell the story that he's going to survive this ordeal. And it kind of reminded me of when Castaway came out, where they showed the trailer of Tom Hanks. It's revealed that he survived at the end and got off the island, so it pretty much killed all the suspense there. I mean, I know this is based on like a first-person novel, but I think it should have been rewritten a bit when adapting it to the screen, because it just, the whole framing device does not work at all. And especially at the end, where they have Pi tell like an alternate version of his story at sea, and instead of like actually showing it in a flashback, they just show him sitting in the bed like telling the story. Like, it totally violates the big principle of cinema, show don't tell. And basically it might have worked in the novel on the page to have a character just sitting in a bed telling the story, but it's absolute death like in cinema, so it really causes the movie to fall apart in like the last half. So I definitely would not rank this as one of the best pictures of the year, but it is nominated and a lot of people seem to like it, and it is kind of Oscar bait, but I thought it was kind of mediocre overall.
Do you think it stands a chance of winning Best Picture?
Possibly. Like I said, this year is harder to predict because a lot of the ones I normally would predict aren't nominated for Best Director. But is Ang Lee nominated for Best Director?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, so possibly. I'm still going to pick Lincoln because it feels like more of an Oscar nomination. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if this one won Best Picture. And as far as Beasts of the Southern Wild, this was another one that it was kind of like just like Life of Pi, where I was struck by it on the visual level. Like, it was really like an interesting world that they threw us in here to, and this like whole like bayou country, this poverty thing that's being hit by a storm. So I was kind of absorbed by the world of the film and like the visual design and the performances, but I just wasn't really like involved in the story that much at all. And I've heard it compared to Terrence Malick's Tree of Life, and I can kind of see it, where it's trying to tell like a small scale story about a poverty stricken girl and her father and her search for a mother, and tries to put in all these higher meaningful like storyline involving like the storm and stuff like that. And I think the section of it that doesn't really work is the oryx, the big creatures that come out of the Arctic and then suddenly like invade this little bayou. It's way too supernatural and just doesn't mesh up with the rest of the film, because most of the film is very realistic and documentary like, but it just seems very bizarre to have like these creatures just kind of come out of nowhere there. So it is very uneven, but I kind of maybe think that's because Ben Zeitlin, the director, is a first-time director, so he may like not know what he was doing in that regard. But I am curious to see more of his films, because he creates an interesting world here. I think one of my biggest complaints of Beasts of the Southern Wild is that it has a bit too much shaky cam, and I really really, I'm glad I didn't see this one in the theater because the camera shakes in it a lot. So hopefully he kind of repairs that for his following film. So I know some people think it's an outside shot to win Best Picture. I would probably overall maybe give it 3 out of 5, but it's definitely not one of my favorite pictures of the year. And I could think of many other films that were probably more deserving of Best Picture nomination, but I can see why this got a nomination because it's a first-time filmmaker with a low budget and non-professional actors, and it became a success, and Hollywood loves those success stories.
I totally predict that this is the one that's going to take home Best Picture, but I don't know. I could be wrong. It is a bit of a crapshoot this year at the Oscars. Really, the two things that I enjoyed about Beast of the Southern Wild, I had a lot of problems with it, but the two things I did enjoy were just the visuals. On a visual level, it's a pretty incredible movie, especially for this like first-time effort that came out of nowhere. And also, of course, the girl, Kevin Jeanne Wallace. I'm probably butchering her name, but she does give a pretty terrific performance. And in my opinion, if you're going to see this movie, you should see it for her.
Yes, definitely. I'm anxious to see if they decide to give her an Oscar just because it would be such a big story, someone at such a young age winning an Academy Award. So I'm really anxious to see Best Actress this year just because there are a lot of very good candidates. So at least the Oscars this year isn't unpredictable, I'll give it that. And yeah, that's about all I've been up to.
I haven't been up to much, except I've actually watched a number of movies featuring aging action stars in preparation for this podcast. So I saw, for example, The Last Stand with Schwarzenegger. But I will talk about that as we get into our main discussion. Outside of the aging action star movies, I caught a sneak preview of the film Warm Bodies from Jonathan Levine, I believe is the name of the director, is the fellow who directed 50-50. And this is a zombie romantic comedy, I guess. That's essentially what it is. A zombie falls in love with a human. A tale of star-crossed lovers. And this is a film... I kind of love these movies, not even because I necessarily like the movie. I just love a film where I start off the marketing campaign with one opinion and then end it with another, and then I get to see sort of which of my opinions turned out to be right. Because at first, when I saw the trailer for Warm Bodies, I was like, oh, God, they're trying to do like a Twilight teen romance thing, except this time, instead of a vampire, it's a zombie. Yeah. So I was unimpressed initially. But after a few of the previews, it actually started looking pretty good, because they were definitely playing it all for laughs, and it started to look more like a romantic comedy version of something like the movie Fido. And so I got kind of excited for it, and I got to see a sneak preview for it. What is the final verdict?
Oh, no.
it's not great, but it's not bad. I mean, that's sort of what it is. The problem I had, it's such a shame, because there's a lot of potential in this movie, but so much of it is unrealized, and things are very inconsistent. The filmmakers can't even seem to decide whether the zombies shamble or run. Like, what kind of zombies are we dealing with here? And, you know, that wouldn't be a big deal, except it kind of becomes crucial when you start pondering, like, what kind of threat the zombies really are to people. Furthermore, there's just no tension. There's no tension all the way through. Like here, this is probably the best example I could give. Minor spoilers for Warm Bodies. This is stuff that you find out in the first like 15 minutes. They have this interesting idea where zombies need to eat flesh to survive, like to sustain themselves, but they eat brains because they can't have their own thoughts or feelings or memories. And when they eat a person's brain, they temporarily absorb that person's thoughts, feelings, and memories. That's a kind of a neat idea, I thought. That they've never really done that in a zombie movie before. Sure. And then they have our main character, this protagonistic zombie called R. He remembers that his name began with an R when he was alive, so they call him R, played by Nicholas Holt. R eats a guy's brain, and then sees the guy's girlfriend and develops a crush on her, and that's like the basis for this movie. I thought, after that happened, okay, here's the tension. The tension is going to be, he's going to start wondering if he really loves her or if he only loves her because he ate her boyfriend's brain. That's a good little hook. They don't do anything with that. That's never really addressed. It's never a problem. They never question it. So then I was like, okay, so the tension in this movie, because there's got to be some kind of tension to keep the plot going. The tension in this movie is going to be, she starts falling in love with him, but he is an undead corpse. You know, and at any moment, he might try to eat her. That seems like some pretty obvious tension. They even do that in Twilight. Like, in Twilight, there's all this conflict where Edward wants to drink Bella's blood, right? I haven't seen the movie, but this is what I understand. Well, no, they don't do that either. He never wants to eat her brains. So then what's the tension? Like, it became this inevitable sort of cascade where, like, oh, okay, they'll fall in love, but her dad will object. Her dad is the main girl who looks a hell of a lot like Kristen Stewart. I believe her name is Selena Palmer, but boy, does she look like Kristen Stewart. Her dad is played by John Malkovich, who clearly only had one day on the set because there are a bunch of scenes where they really obviously are cutting around him and, like, a body double for whoever he's supposed to be talking to. Okay, so her dad is going to want to kill the zombies. He's going to want to kill R. Sure. But it's never really a problem. And everything just sort of happens. I don't know, you know, it's an inoffensive movie, and I don't even object to it because it's a zombie. Zombies are, like, my favorite movie monsters, and a bad zombie movie can really ruin my day. But I don't even dislike Warm Bodies because it's a bad zombie. It's a fine zombie movie that has some really good zombie comedy ideas in it, but boy, talk about wasted potential. I just felt like the whole way through, what a whole lot of wasted potential. So many interesting potential ideas here, none of them realized. The main character's name is Julie, and the main girl. The main zombie is R. So you've got R and Julie. They're very clearly doing Romeo and Juliet, right? Star-crossed lovers. It makes sense. Another idea, this is, you know what's bad? I'm sure this drives you guys crazy too. When you're watching a movie and you start coming up with better ideas for the movie you're watching.
All the time.
Yeah, because what I was thinking was, okay, they're doing Romeo and Juliet. They're not even being subtle about it. How about R starts coming back to life, which is part of the plot. We see that in the trailers. R starts coming back to life. He becomes a human. And then there's a misunderstanding, like in Romeo and Juliet, and he kills himself and comes back as a zombie. And then she kills herself to be with him, and they get to be zombies together. Like, how is that for an interesting spin on Romeo and Juliet?
Where Romeo I'm surprised they didn't do that. It sounds so obvious.
Exactly, it's obvious. No, they don't do that. That is not in the movie anywhere. And yet another example of wasted potential. They practically spelled that ending out for us by having R and Julie as star-crossed lovers, and they even have some really obvious stand-ins too for the different characters. Like, there's a character who is a friend of Julie's, and she's a nurse. Like, they're really obviously paralleling things from Romeo and Juliet, but that ending is never done. I don't know, very disappointing, but. Not a bad movie. I'd give it like 2.5 out of 5, 3 out of 5. Like, I would not be averse to watching it again at some point, but I'm definitely not going to rush out and see it. And, I don't know. If you want this kind of sort of zombie comedy, just watch Fido. Fido is a far superior film, and it's got Billy Connolly, and he's hilarious in it. Other than that, I have been reading a lot of comics. I've been working my way through a comic book series called The Court of Owls. It's a Batman story written by Scott Snyder and Kyle Higgins, both of whom have done really great interviews on Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman podcast recently. But if you like Batman, these are just terrific stories. The Court of Owls is a particularly good one because it goes back in Gotham's history to like these secret societies that have existed since Gotham was founded, and how the Court of Owls that everybody believes is just like something from a nursery rhyme is in fact this almost cult-like presence that has been dwelling in the shadows of Gotham under Batman's nose, and they've only now chosen to reveal themselves to him. It's really, really well written and absolutely terrific. I've got another story by another series by Kyle Higgins lined up called The Gates of Gotham, which is more Gotham history, but with a sort of a steampunky flavor to it. And it just sounds absolutely terrific from what I've read. The cover is magnificent. So I am having a blast reading all these comic books. And if you like Batman and you like Batman comics, seek out basically everything that Scott Snyder and Kyle Higgins have done, because they are just terrific writers. And the artwork in these books is tremendous as well. So I got to give a big recommendation on both counts for Court of Owls and like I said, everything Scott Snyder has done with Batman, everything Kyle Higgins has done as well. It's just all terrific stuff. So now let's talk about those aging action stars. I'm really excited to talk about this because, like I said in the intro, our interest in these 80s movie stars has dated back all the way to the beginning of the podcast when we recorded our second episode on The Expendables. And ever since then, there's just been this rise in popularity for a resurgence of 80s action stars, but also just like 80s properties. You know, we've gotten that remake of Total Recall, and all of these properties are sort of coming back. They're being remade, and the stars are sort of coming out of retirement, I guess you could say. Some of them never really went away. But I thought it might be fun. Like, we can talk about the movies, we can talk about the history of this trend, and we can also talk about all of the stars who are involved in it, who are taking part in this sort of celebration of this older generation of cinema stars. And we can also ponder who's going to take their place. Who are the replacement action stars for when all these guys and some girls eventually retire? So first, let's talk about the history of this trend. And Robin, I know you were saying that you can think of some early examples involving Charles Bronson, right?
Yes, it's kind of interesting to see how much things have changed, because Charles Bronson, I gotta say, a lot of his 80s action pictures are some of my guilty pleasures. I even wrote like a recent column about Death Wish 3, which I think is one of the most hilarious action films of all time. But it's funny to think that like he was still a big box office draw in the 80s, but by that point he was getting into his 60s. And he just received like so much criticism looking over old reviews for doing like these ultra-violent action films like at his age. They were like, oh, come on, how can we believe like a 63-year-old man blowing away like 36 bad guys and stuff? And he still looked pretty good for his age, but like a lot of people just criticized him a lot. And this is when other people like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis were rising to like kind of take his place, and a lot of people were saying Charles Bronson should just like go and retire and stuff and let these other guys take their place. So I find it really interesting that like nowadays everybody is like doing action films in their 60s. Like these same action stars like Stallone and Schwarzenegger are doing it this and they're not receiving like the same amount of criticism that Charles Bronson did. And I guess it's all because of nostalgia, because they haven't really come up with a lot of action stars to replace them. So it is kind of an interesting conflict that like a guy could receive like so much harsh criticism for doing it, and now it's become a trend like 20 years later.
It is pretty remarkable. And I was doing a lot of thinking about sort of examples of this kind of film that predate The Expendables. I keep saying The Expendables, and I really feel like, can we all agree that The Expendables is what sort of launched this resurgence of popularity in these 80s action stars on the big screen?
Oh, totally.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So I was trying to think of pre-Expendables movies that sort of follow this trend. I was thinking, like, in a way, the movie Unforgiven is kind of like the Clint Eastwood version of this sort of thing. Clint Eastwood's getting older by this point, and Unforgiven is sort of like him saying, I'm done with Westerns, like I'm retiring from the Western genre. And the idea of his character William Money in Unforgiven, you know, they talk about how he's getting old. He's getting old. He's just not gonna, he's not fast enough to do this anymore, sort of thing. So in a way, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think Unforgiven counts as sort of the action hero senior citizen genre?
I think so. It's kind of funny that Clint Eastwood has kind of done a couple movies after that where anytime he played a hero in like the '60s, they would at least make it like a plot point that how old he was and that he wasn't as good as he used to be. So, you can get a lot of mileage out of that, I think. And as another comparison, there was also John Wayne in The Shootist. Like he generally didn't, acknowledge how old he was in a lot of his films, but The Shootist, which I believe was his final film, he was playing like I think a character dying of cancer and stuff, and pretty much that was the main plot conflict, is just how old he was and whether he could still go or not.
Now, TK, I know that you suggested that we talk about this topic. Were there any pre-Expendables films that you sort of had in mind?
No, that's why I wanted to talk about it, because there was nothing that immediately jumped to mind. Like, Robin, when you were talking about Bronson, I remember you were saying that he was criticized for still doing action movies at his age, and now we have people much older than him doing that. And what I wanted to see is that, like, so what have we named? You, Gil, you just talked about The Unforgiven. Robin talked about the Death Wish movies.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, was there anything else I missed?
No, those are...
The Shootist.
The Shootist, yeah.
The Shootist. Okay, so those are three movies in the past. 30 years? About?
Well, I've actually got a few more that I want to mention. The first movie I could think of that was really like, how to describe it? It's like an old guy ensemble movie. It was actually from 2000. It wasn't an action movie. It was the film The Crew, starring Burt Reynolds, Richard Dreyfuss, Dan Hedaya, and Seymour Cassell. Do you guys remember this movie?
Yes, I did. It wasn't very good, but it was quite interesting to have like it followed the formula about a bunch of guys who used to be cool but were now past their prime.
Exactly. Yeah. When I was, I didn't even see the movie because I heard it was pretty bad, but I remember seeing a lot of previews for it back in 2000, and the sense that you always get is sort of like it's this team of old dudes. Let's suit up again and do one last heist sort of thing. And it definitely seemed to have the same spirit of celebrating these more senior actors that films like The Expendables do. Same sort of idea, I thought. But again, you know, I guess it doesn't quite qualify because it's more of a comedy than it is anything else. But that was an early example I could think of the old guy ensemble movie. And then... just sort of predating The Expendables, there were a few movies that you could sort of see as being like lead up to The Expendables. Things like Live Free or Die Hard, which was, you know, Bruce Willis returning to Die Hard after how many years was it? Like at least 10? And more than that, 15, 20? Robin, do you know
12,
this?
12, I think.
12?
Yeah, 12.
Yeah, exactly. So he's, you know, sort of coming back. And at that point, Bruce Willis was doing definitely fewer action movies. He was becoming more known for things like The Sixth Sense and stuff like that. And then also Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But you could argue that that's more because of the character than it is because, Harrison Ford is an action hero. I don't know.
There's no way I'm going to count that one.
Oh, no? Okay.
No, Robin.
Where do you fall on this?
Actually, I kind of would because, like, it was kind of part of the plot that this character that you loved in your youth was, like, a lot older and a lot rustier. But actually, another Harrison Ford one I can think of is that movie he did, Hollywood Homicide, because he was playing, like, another action star who would get winded during chase scenes, and they made jokes about him taking Viagra and stuff. So, yeah, every now and then they would still do that with, like, even people like Harrison Ford.
And then there was this is an interesting one because it's a movie that definitely led into led into The Expendables 2 more than The Expendables 1, but JCVD really brought back Van Damme's career from the dead. And it's interesting because JCVD is such an anomaly where it begins with one of probably the best action sequence Van Damme has ever done. Like this extremely long take action sequence that's absolutely terrific. And then the rest of the movie is quite serious and it's a very introspective drama on Van Damme's part. And then following the success of JCVD, he just went right back to doing straight-to-DVD action movies, eventually appearing in The Expendables 2. And then I was also thinking, there was one other movie. What was it? Righteous Kill with De Niro and Pacino, which I didn't see. And again, I think it's less of a crime. It's more of a crime movie than it is an action movie. Robin, I know you've seen this one, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I would count it really because it isn't really like an action movie, and it wasn't one that was kind of acknowledging how old the characters are. It was just kind of like, let's get these two famous actors together with a mediocre script and hope that it's enough to sell the movie.
That's really interesting. Okay, before we get into the Expendables and like the more of the trend following the Expendables, I should ask you guys. You know, Robin, you just said you're not sure if it qualifies because they don't point out how old these guys are. Is that necessarily a qualifier, the self-awareness of the age of the stars?
I think it depends on the material. Like, watching, like, Righteous Kill, like, there aren't any scenes of them doing, like, real over-the-top action-y stuff. Like, you don't see them being, like, Stallone, where they take off their shirt and get into a fight scene. They're just pretty much playing, like, these aging detectives. And I think that the self-awareness helps a lot when you're showing like 60-year-olds doing like physically like draining fight scenes and stunts and stuff, just so it doesn't look ridiculous because the audience is aware like how old these guys really are, and even though they're in phenomenal shape, you just kind of got to acknowledge that you're not supposed to take this seriously, that we know these guys are old, but just have fun watching them for who they are.
Okay, interesting. Now, TK, you didn't want to count Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Why not? What are your qualifiers for a movie to fit into this category?
It's gotta be a compilation action movie. Like we saw Indy Jones because people wanted to bring him back, but like who else was he with? It was just Harrison Ford.
John Hurt's getting pretty old.
Yeah, but which is
Ray
you're right,
Winstone. Ray Winstone too.
Okay, so three. How many people do the Expendables have in it? Eight?
So
ten?
The Expendables really is like your gold standard for this.
That's my baseline for this conversation.
So
yeah.
It's got to have an ensemble cast. I guess the cast members, most of them have to be over 50 or 60.
Yeah, about.
Yeah, and it's got to be an action movie. Okay, so those are the TK qualifiers. And really, I didn't even set down my own qualifier. TK, do you agree that they have to point out the age of the protagonist in order for it to qualify?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Do you agree with Robin that one of the qualifiers to fit into this category of the aging action star motion picture is that at some point they have to point out how old the stars are?
Yeah, if they can poke fun at themselves over that, I think that's ideal. Okay. Especially like Ernie in The Last Stand is always referencing his age and how old.
Yes,
old
that's certainly true.
So,
all right, yeah. That's really interesting. I feel like it is definitely fair to use the Expendables as like the baseline measurement because it's responsible for all of these new movies that we have coming out for the most part. I mean, something like A Good Day to Die Hard. It's another franchise picture, but. Certainly, I don't think the movie, say, Red could exist without the Expendables. Do you guys?
Well, I know they came out around the same time, so I wouldn't say necessarily that the Expendables led to the creation of Red, but the fact that they're making a Red 2 just shows that this thing has caught on and that this trend has become popular.
TK, do you have any thoughts on the Expendables and Red?
Like in terms of
how they compare, do you think that the Expendables is the more influential of the two movies?
I think the Expendables is more influential, but I think Red is a better movie. a much better movie. The Expendables is goofy fun, and Red is actually, like, has a really interesting storyline to it. And that's what I think differentiates the two of them. But I think Red is a more successful film because the acting's a hell of a lot better.
And, Bruce Willis appears in both.
It's true. But I find that in The Expendables, now keep in mind, I still haven't seen The Expendables 2 yet, which is too bad. But I think The Expendables just felt like you were, well, we talked about this in our podcast, it felt like you were being thrown, because usually what we like about ensemble movies is getting the crew together, right? And we skip right into the middle of that in The Expendables. We don't get to see that first half. And I think that takes away a lot from the film. And if they had spent a lot more time on that, it would have been way more interesting. And we get to see that whole process in Red. And also, Red has Helen Mirren, which in my view automatically makes it better than The Expendables, which does not have Helen Mirren in it. So, yes.
I definitely agree that that Red is the superior film. This is a movie that this is one of the movies that I watched in preparation for this podcast. And, you know, I think I liked it a lot more on a second viewing than I even did on a first. And maybe that is in no small part because of how kick-ass Helen Mirren is. But I don't know, guys. Robin, do you agree that that it's probably The Expendables that deserves most of the credit of bringing back these stars' careers?
Oh yeah, like definitely. Like it's kind of funny because even though it got kind of middling and mediocre reviews, it still made a lot of money at the box office. So it showed that there was a market for this. And like a lot of the people who like The Expendables are the same people who complain that they don't make many good action films anymore, that there's just not a large selection out there and not many action stars, so they just get very nostalgic to see all these guys on the big screen again. And the Expendables, it pretty much started a trend.
So now you've brought in nostalgia, and I do think that nostalgia is sort of a key factor in explaining the popularity of action stars like the resurgence of action stars like Bruce Willis, a bad example, Sly Stallone, Dolph Lundgren, those guys. But how would you guys say something like The Expendables differs from another, you know, action movie starring senior citizens? Like Danny Trejo is getting up there in years, but do you equate something like Machete with The Expendables?
Well, not really, just because Danny Trejo was not a big star beforehand, like in the 80s and stuff. He's kind of a guy who started out in small roles and became like one of the most unlikely stars in Hollywood. Like, I remember after seeing Machete, I was shocked to look up that Danny Trejo was in his late 60s. Like, I had no idea. So, but they don't even like acknowledge that he's old or anything. They just like make him look like a badass, and you would never guess that he's in his 60s. So, yeah, Machete's kind of in a different category.
But you used a key word. What about the Danny Trejo movie Badass, where he is quite literally playing a senior citizen who starts fighting back with a big stick?
Oh, I've never actually seen that one. Not See, familiar with it, surprisingly.
It's not that old. It definitely came out after The Expendables, but that is one where it was based on some like YouTube video that went viral. I don't know the full story. The movie is highly mediocre, but it's Danny Trejo as, like, a retired Marine who gets into, like, a gang war with these punks. And he wears a fanny pack, and throughout the movie they're referring to how old he is. So I wonder if you think that one makes the cut, or is nostalgia another one of these key elements that has to be in a movie for it to really feel like it's part of the same grouping as The Expendables?
Yeah, I think that helps a lot because, like, audiences weren't really familiar with Danny Trejo when he was younger. Like, they only know him from when he was in his 50s and 60s when he became a big star. So it's not like there's much to feel nostalgia about with him just because he started so late in life.
So I have an article here from the Detroit News written by Tom Long. The headline is Aging Action Heroes, Last of the Breed. And what Long sort of posits here is that we are obsessed with these old icons of cinema because they were from this different time in cinema where it was more about star power than it was about the power of a character. For example, where does he say it here? The biggest action star of the past few years has been a guy named Sam Worthington, the lead in Avatar, Terminator Salvation, Clash of the Titans. These are films that have made billions of dollars worldwide, and yet Sam Worthington can probably walk down any street in America unrecognized. Even an actor who's come closest to duplicating action actor's success of yore, Robert Downey Jr., who has both Iron Man and Sherlock Holmes franchises, isn't in the same class as the old boys. Iron Man is an Iron Man movie, not a Robert Downey Jr. movie. It all boils down to, these are the roles, not the actors. Whereas, no one besides Sly Stallone could play Rocky or Rambo. And nobody except Bruce Willis could be John McClane. Perhaps some of the failure of Terminator Salvation is because Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. It's not really the other way around. So the theory here is that it's both nostalgia and sort of a lack of people to sort of pass the torch on to. And we're going to get to that later on in the discussion. But it's always felt to me, looking at these movies, like there's this almost this note of desperation. And that brings us to The Expendables 2, which I quite enjoyed. But this is where they're really trying to cram in every nostalgic action hero as possible. What do you guys think? Do you have any thoughts on Tom Long's opinions? And I don't know, did you, like me, detect that note of desperation just to keep their careers going with The Expendables 2?
Well, I do agree with this point on how, like, it used to be that the star rather than the character was the draw, because, like you said, Sam Worthington is not a guy that anyone is going to pay money to see a movie just because it has Sam Worthington in it. It's just because he attached himself to some popular projects that he's been in a lot of successful movies. But when you look back at so many action movie trailers from the 80s and early 90s, they would always start with, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger in Raw Deal and Steven Seagal is Out for Justice and stuff. Like, the star was the attraction, and it wouldn't even matter who the character was or what the storyline was that he was a part of. And I can kind of sense the desperation there, because like Arnold Schwarzenegger, The Last Stand, like, that's his first solo project in like many years, and it's like the storyline for it is as generic as you can get. It doesn't even matter, so it just kind of feels like desperation, like, we're gonna put this guy's name to it even though he's in his 60s and hope that it draws box office. And of course, in the case of The Last Stand, it didn't. So it's almost like The Expendables was kind of a training ground for a lot of these guys to test the waters again and star and headline their own movies.
Absolutely. It seems like it, especially since the first Expendables movie felt like it was done for a lot less money than The Expendables 2. I mean, I think it was, but it's almost like The Expendables was the proof of concept, and now we come to The Expendables 2, and it's more of a payoff than the first Expendables movie was. And it's also allowed stuff like The Last Stand to happen, where, you know, The Expendables proved that Schwarzenegger might actually still have some star power in him. TK, what do you think of all this? Are we lacking in a new generation of action stars? And do you feel like part of the motivation behind this trend is just trying to keep these action heroes of yesteryear's careers alive?
In response to the second question, I feel that it's a mix of nostalgia and the desire to keep working for the actors. So, like, people are going to go see Stallone shoot people because that's what people remember him doing in Rambo. And people are going to go see Arnie do an action movie because we grew up watching him in Terminator, you know? So there's that nostalgia bit to it. And obviously, they don't want to just bow out into the limelight. Like you were saying before JCVD started, like, who had heard of Jean-Claude Van Damme in, like, 5-10 years, right? So I think this gives them a nice little boost and lets them stick in the limelight for a little longer. And I think those are the two primary motivators to it. As for future action stars, the thing that I find is that we don't have old school action films anymore. Like, you don't see anything like Die Hard. Actually, there was a really good article by Dan O'Brien from Crack.com who was talking about like three types of films they don't make anymore. And one of them was a regular guy in an action movie, like the first Die Hard. where a normal guy gets caught up in this situation, has to use everything he can to get out of it, and becomes an action hero. And we don't see movies like that anymore, which is I find is incredibly disappointing. But then you try and look and see who would be a good action star, like who would be able to be another John McClane or another Rambo or another Terminator. Like, who's going to be able to do that? And I don't know. I tried really hard thinking about it. And, like, one person who I would like to see go action, I think, because I think it'd be hilarious, is Chris Pine.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're going to ponder the replacements in a bit. But we've definitely hit upon – I think Dan O'Brien's certainly onto something there. It has been a very long time since we've last seen a movie about a normal guy caught in an extraordinary situation that forces him to sort of become an action hero. In a way, like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead are the kinds of films that are doing it now, sort of almost poking fun at the idea, while at the same time being these great entries into the genre. But we really don't see Die Hard movies that are like Die Hard movies anymore. You know, John McClane has become John McClane, and he's just going to keep on being John McClane. We're never going to get to see him turn into John McClane anymore, if that makes any sense. So let's talk a bit about these stars as well. I have a lengthy list here. Bruce Willis is right at the top. Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dolph Lundgren, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Chuck Norris. Richard Dreyfuss has been like doing this for the past 20 years practically. And then you've got people, you've got like these, the lesser ones who don't have the nostalgic value, but are taking part in the fun as well. Like Helen Mirren. I mean, she's a great actress, but she hasn't really been an action hero until recently. Likewise, John Malkovich, you know, because he has such range, you never really think of him as an action hero. Then there's Danny Trejo, whose popularity is only coming, you know, to its peak as of late. And then I also noticed that, like, Jason Statham and Jet Li kind of get lumped in with these guys, certainly in the Expendables movies. But I don't know, guys. What do you think? I hesitate to put them in the same category because, they're certainly younger and spryer. I don't feel like Jet Li should necessarily retire anytime soon because he clearly still has the moves.
Yeah, it's funny with Jason Statham is that he's lumped into them, but he's one of the only, like, old-school action stars, like, still getting theatrical releases now because, you know, I mean, just this past weekend, they released a movie of his called Parker and stuff, and it's like, it looks about as generic as an action film can get, but it's kind of sold on the star, like Jason Statham. Like, he's one of the few action stars where he can headline a movie, and even though the storyline or the character won't be memorable, they're hoping that his name will help sell the movie, and he does all right for himself, but he's nowhere near as successful as Stallone and Schwarzenegger were in their prime and stuff. And Jet Li, he's getting up there in age. Like, I believe he's almost 50 now, and I guess he's doing less martial art films these days just because I guess it's harder to do it at his age, but he's a guy that could still like headline his own action films. Like, I don't think people feel nostalgic for him at all. Like, if he wants to, he could still keep churning out movies and still drawing in people to theaters.
It occurs to me I really should have Steven Seagal on this list as well. Not because it's almost like he's moved away from movies in the past little while, but he did turn up as the villain in Machete, and I know he's got this sort of constant stream of straight to DVD films coming out. I don't know. Do you think he belongs in the same category as all these other guys?
Yeah, like just because he did the role of Machete, where he was kind of poking fun of himself. Yeah, but like these days, he's not doing many movies at all. He used to do tons of straight-to-video films, but he's one of those guys where he's become almost a real self-parody of himself, like where it's like the movies that he was doing straight to DVD for the past 10 or 15 years were kind of like unintentional comedies of their own, so it's kind of like, what could he do in The Expendables to poke any more fun of himself? Because he's kind of become a bigger joke than any of the other older action stars, I'd say.
For sure. TK, do you think Statham, Jet Li, and Steven Seagal belong in the same category as the likes of Sly Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Dolph Lundgren, and all of them?
I don't think Jet Li does. Statham is kind of like he's an on-the-fencer. Because he has, like Robin was just saying, he can headline his own action films. But I don't know. I think they pulled him into The Expendables and made him, I'm going to use quotes right here, the main character. Because we get a lot more of his backstory than anyone else. To pull some people in who may not have seen older action movies and may have grown up watching like The Transporter and that sort of thing, or Crank. I think that's why Statham's there for billboard power. Cause to be perfectly honest, I don't feel he brings anything extra that another older action star wouldn't, to be perfectly honest. Like, he's got his own way of doing things, but, Statham should keep doing Statham movies, not older ensemble action movies. I don't think Jet Li belongs there at all. Like, it throws me off. Like, he is getting older, but again, Jet Li was a headliner for a long, long time, and to be perfectly honest, I still think he could do it. If he wanted to start making action films again, I think he wouldn't have any problem at all pulling in box office numbers with it.
And Steven Seagal?
Oh, fuck Steven Seagal.
Oh, but does he belong?
I'm sorry, like I know Robin and you were just saying, like, he doesn't seem to do as many movies as now, and you know what? That's great. That's fantastic. I'm not a huge Steven Seagal fan at all, and just,
But you don't consider him in the same category?
Well, I consider him in the same category. It's like he's in the same book, but in a completely different chapter.
Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you look at the careers of these different actors, how similar some of them are. It's almost like they go in pairs. Like, I feel like Harrison Ford and Bruce Willis maybe are sort of similar, where they've done a wide range of stuff. Like, they've done more serious things, and then they've done their action movies as well. And then, like, Sly Stallone and Schwarzenegger are sort of equivalent. Dolph Lundgren and JCVD, they're sort of equivalent as well. I don't know where Chuck Norris fits into all this. He's sort of like this rogue agent where he did a bunch of stuff in the 80s and then just became an internet meme for until the point where he made his cameo in The Expendables 2.
He also had a very successful TV series, I guess, that kind of kept him relevant all these years.
That's
even
right.
Though his movies weren't popular.
Walk the Texas Ranger is sort of an undeniable piece of popular culture. I don't know, guys. Have I missed someone here? Are we missing anybody from this list? Does it really just boil down to The Expendables?
I have one. What the fuck is Mickey Rourke doing in The Expendables?
You wonder what he's doing in that? I don't know.
Because I don't know Rourke from action movies. I know him from acting very well when he was younger. And I can't think of anything he's been in that's been hugely action, so I'm trying to figure out what the hell he's doing there.
Sin City.
And I know he wasn't, like, he just ran the shop, but, like, I don't know.
You know what I think the connection is there? I think the connection is that he is an actor who had a big career comeback. I think that's sort of where he fits in. Rob and I just accidentally cut you off there. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say he did a few action films in the early 90s. I know he did that one with Don Johnson called Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. And I think he's also kind of known to the action crowd for his infamous fight scene in the Roman Colosseum with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dennis Rodman in Double Team, which the Nostalgia Critic turned into a meme called Frying the Coke, because he sets off a huge explosion and Van Damme and Robin block themselves with a row of Coke machines. So yeah, Mickey Rourke did quite a few action films in like the 90s.
So, I mean, does that answer your question, TK? I feel like the fact that he's also made a big career comeback in recent years probably has something to do with it. You know, it seems like this part of the spirit of The Expendables, at least for much of the central cast, not all of them, but much of them, is this sort of like phoenix resurrection of several careers all at once, especially like Stallone and Dolph Lundgren. So now that we're talking about the stars, are there any other trends, just like the sort of pairings I listed out there? Anything else you guys notice that as a commonality between all these guys, besides, of course, the Expendables movies?
Well, what's interesting is a lot of them, I think what kind of changed the course of the action genre is straight-to-video films, where, like, Schwarzenegger, I guess, never fell into that trap, but even Stallone did a few straight-to-video movies, and Jean-Claude Van Damme and definitely Dolph Lundgren, their careers kind of were relegated to that, like, once they stopped being successes. And I think that's the key difference between the 80s and now, is that a lot of these cheesy action films don't get theatrical releases anymore. They just go straight to DVD and video. Like, these days, like, Van Damme and Lundgren are appearing together again in Universal Soldier sequels, so it's kind of like they're making you nostalgic for like the 90s in the days of straight to video movies by like replaying like these old roles of theirs, and they're not even making it to the big screen anymore. And I think that's had a profound impact on the action genre in general, and that's kind of why they've used the Expendables to resurrect their career, because a lot of them hadn't appeared on the big screen in many, many years.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, who's going to take their place. This topic kind of melds in with, examining these stars in sort of their twilight years. And, I was trying to think, this is sort of like the hardest question to answer, is who do we pass the torch on to? My immediate thought was, okay, well, what about people like Tom Cruise? Yeah. Tom Cruise, you know, he's quite the action star. He does serious acting as well, but he definitely does plenty of action movies. And then it occurred to me, well, he's like 50, 51 now, isn't he? He's in his early 50s. So he might be joining these guys pretty soon too. And if you look at a movie like Haywire, it's got a couple of sort of older guys who have been in some action movies, Michael Douglas and Antonio Banderas. They're getting up there in years as well. So I do have a few other names, but a lot of my first instincts were just guys like, wow, they're going to be the next Expendable cast in, you know, a decade. What do you guys think? Who do you predict? Robin, I know you love action movies. You must have some predictions as to who's going to be the next big action star.
Well, it's kind of funny. I'm finding a trend these days where a lot of the good action stars are already actors who get successful doing other movies. Like, I look at the Bourne franchise where it something like that, if it had gotten released in the 80s, like the stars of it might have only done like action movies. They would have been typecast in those roles. But these days you have Matt Damon and Jeremy Renner who are able to forge like successful careers outside of the genre. Like Jeremy Renner, I think, would be a terrific like permanent action star for the next couple decades, but he's also a guy who wants to do like other projects and stuff, who's got so much talent that he can't just be relegated to the genre.
Yeah, Jeremy Renner is definitely a prime candidate. It's funny, you know, even though I love Matt Damon in the Bourne movies, I still don't really think of him as an action star. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe you have to do a superhero movie before I really consider you to be some kind of action star. TK, I don't know. What do you think? Damon?
I don't know. I don't consider Damon an action star. Although I agree with you, Renner I can see being one if he sticks with that. I had a couple. Are we going to do the listing thing now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Like I said, I think if Chris Pine went action, that'd be badass. I really think that would be kind of cool. Although he hasn't done obviously that many because he's going to be rolling on Star Trek for a while. But I think it'd be because he did do, what was that movie he did with on the train?
Oh, Unstoppable.
Yeah. You never know.
You could do it. Certainly his Star Trek co-star, Chris Hemsworth, has been doing a fair amount of action.
Yeah.
And Chris Hemsworth's brother, too, was in The Expendables 2.
Oh, really? Liam Hemsworth was
yeah.
in there? I would like to... Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. My mind just blanked. Clive Owen, if he dedicated himself to just doing action films, I think would do really well. And I just realized that my list is more hypothetical than actual action stars.
Really? Well, let's see. You have more of them?
I was just trying to think. Renner and – oh, my God. I'm sorry. I've lost my list.
Come no back problem.
What about Daniel Craig? Is that who you're thinking of?
No, because Craig is Bond, and he should stay as Bond for as long as he can.
Oh, but does that disqualifies him?
Yeah, Bond is a separate category from action films for me. There's action movies, and then there's Bond movies, and I don't think you can switch.
Okay, is that it? So does that feed back into the Tom Long article where he posits that sort of thing is more based around the character than it is the actor playing him?
Yeah, Bond is about Bond. It's not about who's playing him. It's just about James Bond.
Okay. Because I would definitely pick Daniel Craig as a decent candidate. Not that he's been in a ton of action movies outside of Bond, but he's certainly been in movies outside of Bond that I thought he was quite good in. A couple of picks that I have just listed here, I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson is a pretty prime replacement for Schwarzenegger. I know for a while they were sort of preening Vin Diesel to be the next sort of Schwarzenegger stand-in, but I think The Rock is pretty solid, and he has a certain degree of charisma to him as well. He could probably pull it off. We'll see with G.I. Joe Retaliation how well he does. Liam Neeson as well is definitely moving into this action hero territory, particularly with the Taken movies. He's really sort of making a name for himself as like an action movie dad, which is sort of an odd character to take on. And then you've got people like, you know, Jet Li and Jackie Chan. They're getting up there in years. I think that if/when Expendables 3 happens, it would be great to have them both in there somewhere. And likewise, Jason Statham. I feel like Jason Statham's inclusion in the Expendables, as well as people like Terry Crews and Randy Couture, maybe to some degree as well. It's almost like Stallone and company are trying to line these guys up as their replacements, as the next big action heroes. And Statham has certainly done his fair share. Like we've already stated with movies like Parker, you know, he's become his own box office draw in much the same way that these action heroes of yesteryear were box office draws based on their name, not just the character.
One guy that I think would be a good action star after seeing the movie Haywire is Michael Fassbender. When I saw that fight scene he did with Gina Carano, I thought, man, this guy could be a great action star. But I guess the problem is he's too good an actor just to relegate himself to that genre. There are a lot of guys in this generation who would be great action stars, but they're just way too talented, so they don't want to just like keep themselves typecast in these films.
You know, you say that, Robin, and after watching The Last Stand, I kind of have to agree. I feel like we as viewers demand a bit more out of our action stars than we have in the past. And because as much as I love those good old Arnold movies like, you know, Predator, Commando, Terminator, take your pick, he's lost a lot of his screen presence as he's gotten older. Obviously, he's not an imposing physical presence anymore, but at the same time, I just did not feel like his character had a hell of a lot to offer. I don't know if that's the screenplay or if it's Arnold, but boy, I don't know. Just doesn't really feel the same. Maybe he just didn't spout enough of his catchphrases.
That's true. Like, I'm the sheriff should not be your key signature one-liner. They should have come up with a lot better than that.
It's true, yeah. So, Robin, you saw The Last Stand. TK, did you see it?
No, I'm afraid. I never got a chance to, I'm afraid.
Boy, you know, we might as well just take a little bit of time to talk about that, because that was another one of the movies that I watched in anticipation of this podcast. And because it's the most recent one in this trend, it really is sort of like this litmus test to see how long this can continue, like how long it can sustain itself just based on these aging action stars. One really confusing thing about The Last Stand for me, I don't know if you noticed this, Robin, but it seems like all these prominent people in this tiny little small town, they have really weird accents for a tiny yeah. little small town. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger still has his trademark accent, very thick, and you kind of wonder why he's this, like, small-town sheriff in this little U.S., you know, village, basically. And likewise, Peter Stormare is, like, playing a southerner for some reason. It felt very confused, but overall...
I'm sorry, Peter Stormare can play anything he wants.
You know, I love Peter Stormare. Do not get me wrong, but I don't know. He's putting on the southern accent for no reason. He's not very good at it, and he's Peter Stormare. Why do you need to give him a Southern accent? It's just, yeah, this film was just so bland and generic, and I have this prediction that Stallone's next movie, Bullet to the Head, is going to be similarly just bland and generic and trying way too hard to cash in on its star's name without actually having any substance to it. Robin,
Sorry, I was just going to say, in the case of Bullet in the Head, in fairness to it, it's being directed by Walter Hill, who used to be like the go-to guy for making action films in the 80s, but he hasn't really directed anything in a while. So here's a case of a famous action director from the 80s now being brought back to direct kind of a generic-looking action film.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that that will be really interesting. While you had told me, Robin, that The Last Stand was nothing to write home about, I did want to make sure to watch it just so, you know, I'd be able to talk about it. But I quite like some of Ji-Woon Kim's films, Ji-Woon Kim being the director of The Last Stand, in particular The Good, The Bad, The Weird, and also I Saw the Devil, were both pretty awesome movies. I Saw the Devil is like a harrowing revenge film, but that's really amazingly shot. And so even though I knew this movie was not going to be great, some part of me was like, ah, but it'll be okay, because Ji-Woon Kim, he can at least direct action pretty decently. I don't know. It really just was not much, and I certainly hope Walter Hill can do a better job with similar material. Well, guys, do we have any other thoughts on the aging action here? What do you think? What is the appeal? I mean, we've sort of narrowed it down to nostalgia value, people being nostalgic for a particular kind of action movie star that doesn't exist anymore. Do you feel like that is it? Like, it's that through and through? Or are there other factors in play? And, you know, these action movie stars, in the case of The Expendables, while they do throw in people like Statham or Liam Hemsworth to try and appeal to the younger crowd, it still feels like a lot of this is pandering to the 30 and up crowd, you know, guys sort of around our age bracket and older, which is a bit unusual outside the typical demographic for a movie, which is like 18 to 35. Do you guys have any thoughts on, like, why that is? Why is this successful now? Is it something about, like, people younger than we are don't like going to the movie cinema anymore? Or they like to just watch things on demand at home? Does that have anything to do with it?
Well, first thing I just want to say that I think it has a lot to do with Sylvester Stallone, who started this whole trend even before The Expendables, because he did like Rocky Balboa and Rambo. Like, it was basically, he was a guy whose career had kind of, was fledging, and he decided to resurrect his two most iconic characters. And it's like, I remember the first time I saw the trailer for Rocky Balboa, I was snickering. Like, you can't be serious doing a Rocky film in the year 2006, but it turned out to be like way better than expected, and a big box office hit. And so Stallone say, hey, if I can resurrect Rocky, I'm going to do it with Rambo. And then he did it with Rambo, and it wasn't a great film, but it was also way better than expected. And I think that's when they kind of thought, there's a market for this, resurrecting these old like characters and action stars from the 80s, even though they're in their 60s now. And that's what led to The Expendables. And I think that was kind of the testing ground to show that there was a market for these old like action stars and action characters and stuff. And I guess they just kind of realized that maybe people like film goers in our demographic are just so sick of Hollywood reusing the same ideas that hey, if we're going to reuse the same ideas, why not we bring back stuff that people actually liked instead of just remaking it? And so because we'll have a sense of nostalgia for it, so it's kind of like, instead of trying to remake an old Stallone or Schwarzenegger film, let's get them back to play these roles themselves or play these old characters, because at least audiences are so sick of remakes that they'll prefer seeing the real thing, even though it's pretty much the same material. They'll at least prefer seeing the original actors who played the same characters.
You know, I really should have done this research. I'd have to do a lot of comparative research to do this. But I'd love to compare the box office numbers to things like the remake of Total Recall, or, you know, there's also that upcoming remake of RoboCop. I'd love to see what the box office numbers are on those when you compare them to something like The Expendables. You know, it, property versus star, in a way. Sort of like, are we more nostalgic for these old action stars, or are we more nostalgic for these old action properties? I'd be very interested to look into that. I'll have to look into that and do sort of a mini follow-up discussion on it, because I feel like that will almost answer what, the big question for us. What is it that is appealing to people about these action stars of days of yore?
It's kind of funny, because something like Total Recall, I know, did lukewarm at the box office, and I'm pretty sure that Expendables 2, like, far outgrossed it. But then you look at The Last Stand, which finished something like 6th or 7th on the list and is pretty much almost gone from theaters now. So it's kind of like, oh, well, these all these stars together will draw, but just Arnold Schwarzenegger by himself doesn't seem to be quite as successful.
The, oh, yeah, are they stronger than the sum of their parts anymore?
Yeah.
Now, like I've been saying, TK, you were, you know, you really wanted to talk about this. Do you have any, like, revelations? Is it, does your desire to talk about this trend stem from some realization you had recently?
Well, just that we had a glut of movies like this recently, and I was trying to figure out whether or not there was a reason for them being so popular now as opposed to being so popular, like 30 years ago. I think the reason is that, like, we've all started growing up with these action stars, and now that they're all getting older, it's, we want to keep seeing them do the things we saw them do when we were younger. So that's why the market's so large for them.
It's a nostalgia thing. It seems
totally.
It seems like the answer really is just that simple. So, I don't know, do we have any further thoughts on this? You guys looking forward to Bullet in the Head or Red 2?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Red 2, and I don't know if I'll go...
Red 2.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny that that's almost a trend in itself, is put respectable actors like Helen Mirren and Morgan Freeman and John Malkovich in action films, and it's almost... It was kind of funny that it was kind of like, now that all these old stars are doing their old thing, we're just going to try it with, like, big-name actors now, and it has been a kind of a successful formula in itself. But I remember us talking about A Good Day to Die Hard and how this is the type of action film where if it wasn't part of the Die Hard franchise, there would probably be very little interest to see it whatsoever. So that's kind of the example of a film that's hinging entirely on the success of its star and the successful franchise, whereas otherwise it would just be a completely forgettable action film.
I must say, I am really curious about Schwarzenegger returning to the Terminator franchise. Just because The Last Stand did not do very well at the box office, and, like, I don't know, is that even going to work? What do you think of that, guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've already talked about the whole thing, how ridiculous it'll look that the Terminator is like an older man in his 60s, but also the previous Terminator films, like Terminator Salvation, got such a lukewarm response that I kind of have a feeling people are kind of sick of the Terminator franchise now, and that maybe not even the return of Arnold Schwarzenegger himself is going to regenerate a lot of interest in it.
He's even talking about doing another Conan movie.
Hmm.
TK,
we did an unsuccessful remake of Conan, so now we're going to try to make another Conan film with Arnold. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, really. TK, are you looking forward to any of these films?
Just Red 2.
Just I'll Red 2?
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess you're not itching to see The Last Stand, certainly not after Robin and I gave it such a lukewarm reception.
Well, I kind of is still interested in seeing it, but I'm not going to rush out and go see it in theaters this week.
Do you think
it'll be a cheap night movie, I think, if anything.
Do you think Stallone has the chops to succeed with Bullet in the Head or Bullet
no.
to the Head? I don't know which better it's called.
I think Stallone is getting too old and too plastic to do anything properly, but that's just me.
And Terminator 5 with Arnie, you want to see that?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to see Terminator 5 with Arnie?
No.
No. Okay, so this is really interesting, though. So, you're excited for Red 2. Did you see
the ensemble movies, man? So I'll watch ensemble action movies. I won't see single action movies anymore.
Okay.
No,
and so even the new Die Hard is not one that appeals to you?
No, I like the first three Die Hards, and then after that, I don't know.
Did you see Live Free or Die Hard?
What's that?
Did you see Die Hard 4?
No, I did not.
And you just have no interest in it?
No, not really at all.
That is fascinating. The ensemble aspect is what makes it for you. So it's sort of like, I don't know, it's almost like you'd rather buy the set of action figures than just have one, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Keep the collection together.
That's very interesting. Robin, do you feel the same way? Are you a bit more flexible? You'll watch these star pictures starring only like one or two of the Expendables cast?
Oh yeah, like I said, I watched a lot of bad Charles Bronson films from the 80s, a lot of bad Steven Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme films when they're in their prime, so I have no problem whatsoever watching these, single star action films, even though, they're probably gonna be very generic and not very good. One I am kind of looking forward to in a perverse sort of way is The Tomb coming out later this year, because it's Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone teaming up together, and, I think that film will kind of be the real test of whether these guys are still draws, if you can put the two big action stars together in a film. And I think Vinnie Jones is in it as well, so it's going to be interesting to see if this one is successful or if this one will kind of signify that people are tired of these guys.
Vinnie Jones, I feel like he has almost achieved sort of Stathamhood with his being known just for being this action movie star and being known for who he is rather than just the characters he plays. Yeah, I'm curious about the future of these action stars. Any other thoughts before we wrap this up?
One thing I thought of is that I think the thing that would help a lot of these action star vehicles, if they got someone like Edgar Wright or Simon Pegg to write the scripts for them, because we've talked about Hot Fuzz and what a brilliant job it did, like poking fun of the act, where they were still solid action films in their own right while poking fun of the cliches at the same time. And when I saw The Last Stand and I saw that big shootout climax in the middle of town, I kept thinking to myself how much better the climax was in Hot Fuzz. And I think that's kind of the most disappointing aspects of these films, is that they work with such generic scripts, and I'd like to see them go with a screenwriter like Edgar Wright, who would know how to play to their strengths and the cliches of the genre and probably make for much more entertaining films overall.
Not only that, it seems like a critical part of the success of these movies is just not taking themselves too seriously, you know? Part of the appeal of Hot Fuzz is that not only is it a great action movie, but it's just really funny, too. And I feel like something that's definitely lacking, when you look at something like The Last Stand, you know, there is a bit of humor in The Last Stand, but it's just so generic, and the humor is not particularly self-aware. At least, even in the first Expendables movie, which we overall didn't really like that much, there wasn't a lot of self-aware humor, but then when you get to the Expendables 2, and you have these deliberate moments of self-aware humor, like where Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis are swapping famous one-liners, or when Chuck Norris shows up and tells a Chuck Norris joke, it's almost like you need that one level of silliness, you know, pointing out just how fun and silly this all is, in order to make it work. I mean, I love Walter Hill, but I'm really skeptical about Bullet to the Head. If you look, I mean, even the poster, you look at the poster, it's such a generic design. It could easily be a DVD cover. And something that's sort of confusing about it is part of the point of this movie is that it's Sly Stallone, you know, they're going to point out how old he is, but he's back. And yet on the poster, they really obviously have airbrushed a lot of Stallone's wrinkles out. So it's like not even they buy their own shtick. I don't know, Robin. I mean, you point out that it was Walter Hill, which definitely makes me need to take some more things into consideration. But do you think that Bullet to the Head is going to be worthwhile?
I'm going to watch it at some point eventually, but I don't have hopes of it being anything more than forgettable at the very least. It's probably I know it's based on a graphic novel of some sort, but it's probably going to be one that you completely forget about a year from now.
I suspect so as well. TK, do you have any final thoughts before we close off our discussion of the aging action star's role in the Hollywood box office these days?
I want to see Richard Dreyfuss do more stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you see him?
I really do.
Did you see him in Piranha?
No, I didn't. The latest thing Peter Davison is Red.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, but I would like to see him be a bad guy in more things because he amuses me.
He was definitely enjoyable in Red. I also feel like Carl Urban is probably being sort of lined up as another action star. It's sort of funny. He starred in Red, which was one of the movies, you know, it didn't have the big influence the Expendables did, but definitely helped launch this idea of the ensemble cast of, you know, 50-plus aged actors. So Carl Urban was in that one, and then he did Dread this year, or last year, rather. Not a remake, but the same property that Stallone had tackled many years earlier. So I think there may be a connection there. I think that he might be... maybe one of the next big action stars, if he plays his cards right. He was in Lord of the Rings as well. And Doom. Oh, my God. He was also in Doom. Any last thoughts, guys? Last chance?
I think that's it.
We're getting too old for this shit. Time for the dumb joke of the week. A nurse sees a doctor scribbling furiously and shaking his pen when she notices that he's actually holding a thermometer. So the nurse walks over and says, "Doctor, you're holding a rectal thermometer." And the doctor looks down and says, "Oh, my God, some asshole's got my fountain pen."
Oh, God.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at the back row. Email TK at tk@the-back-row.com. Be sure to peek behind the velvet rope for the steamy side of the back row. Robin can be reached by emailing robin.warder@the-back-row.com. Be sure to check out Robin's regular features, Robin's Underrated Gems, and Before They Were Stars. I write every day on the back row. You can email me at gil@the-back-row.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back.
Music for today's podcast comes to us courtesy of the Back Row's webmaster, Michael. You can contact Michael through the Back Row, the-back-row.com.